On Tech News Today, the NFL's coming to Snapchat, plus the latest Roomba vacuum cleaning robot gets really, really smart, and a new trailer for the Steve Jobs movie reveals the recreation of a famous photo. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, September 17th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle. Would you like to get cash for your old iPhone? Gazelle makes it easy. The shipping is free and the payment is fast. What's your iPhone worth? Find out at gazelle.com. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is Fusion editor Kashmir Hill. Hey, Kashmir, how you doing?
I am good. Good morning.
Now, okay, here's the deal. You got a bar mitzvah coming up, and you need karaoke. Who are you going to call?
You're going to call the freaking awesome Karaoke Express, a mobile karaoke truck that'll come to you with an unbelievable selection of songs.
That sounds unbelievable, literally unbelievable.
It is unbelievable because I completely made it up, created accounts for it on Yelp and Facebook and Twitter, and then found out how hard it was to buy it, fake likes, fake fans, and fake reviews.
And how hard was it?
It was so easy and so cheap. It was a bit disturbing. I went shopping on Fiverr.com, which is like a gig economy startup where you can hire freelancers to do just about anything, and bought 19,000 Twitter followers for $21, multiple five-star reviews on Yelp and Facebook, again, for $5, and some Facebook fans, which were a little bit more expensive. I could only get 200 Facebook fans for $5.
What a ripoff. I guess since they have the monopoly on every human being on the planet, they can go ahead and jack up the prices. Now, what do we have to do to make this truck happen? You have a picture of a freaking awesome Karaoke Express van truck thing. How hard would that be to conjure up?
So Fusion's art department already made me a logo, and I did, over the course of the months that I was running the fake freaking awesome Karaoke Express, get many phone calls to the burner phone number that I set up from people who wanted to hire it for especially birthday parties. And I personally love karaoke, which is why this is the fake business I created. So I do actually kind of want to create the truck if there's any venture capitalists who watch the show who want to give me a seed round.
Well, when robots write all the do all the journalism, it's nice to have a fake business to fall back on. It's good to know that. And of course, you can read that story and all of Kashmir Hill's stories at fusion.net. So go read that. This is a great read. Very fun stuff. And I'm rooting for that truck. I hope you can make it happen somehow.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, well, let's jump into the regular news. Amazon introduced 6 new hardware devices today, 4 tablets and 2 TV devices. David Pierce is a senior writer for Wired and joins us now. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you. I've been trying to get you on the show for it's freaking awesome to have you on the show. That's all I'm saying. Let's start with the big news, which is the bottom price for these tablets. Tell us about the 7-inch Fire tablet, starting with the price.
Yeah, so the 7-inch Fire tablet is now $49.99, which is a just entirely ridiculous price for a tablet. And for a $50 tablet, it isn't, you know, you're never going to get a great tablet for $50. But the amazing thing that Amazon has done, which seems to be kind of Amazon's move in general, is to make everything just one step better than it feels like it should be for the cost. And the tablet, it's not impressive. Like, nobody who buys an iPad is going to go buy this instead and be happy. But for $50, this is all of the growth in the tablet market right now. And it's going to be a huge market for Amazon. And it's going to be a lot of people who can afford this device that couldn't afford anything else. And I think it's actually pretty exciting. And they're selling them in a 6-pack. You can buy 6 of them for the price of 5. And it comes in a little carrier that looks like it came from Taco Bell and is kind of adorable, honestly.
That is crazy, especially coming on the heels of the iPad Pro, which which was so expensive. This seems very, very affordable. What is the cost of the other tablets that they have?
So they're selling a bigger 8-inch version for, I believe, $149.99, and then the 10-inch version for $229.99. And their whole idea with these tablets is that they are not the iPad. Like, the funny part about talking to the folks at Amazon before the launch was basically they were saying, if you want to buy something that does the things an iPad does, terrific. Go buy an iPad. Please do it on Apple.com. But if you want an iPad, go buy an iPad. Which is very unlike what they've said before. They kind of came out originally with the Fire tablets and were like, these are better than the iPad. And they weren't, and everybody figured that out very quickly. But with these, they're like, look, if you want to watch movies, if you are a Prime subscriber, and if you want to do the things that come with being an Amazon Prime subscriber, these are the best and cheapest ways to do those things without spending a lot of money or doing a lot of work. And all of the features of these tablets are built towards that. Like, it's great for reading, it's great for watching movies, and for all the other stuff, buy an iPad, which is kind of refreshing to hear from Amazon.
It really is, and it's pretty hilarious, and a lot of people are making a lot of fun with the fact that the six-pack itself is significantly cheaper than one of the cheapest iPads. So that's quite a price. It's just mind-blowing. Now, they also had a kids version for $99 that has a bumper on it that's supposed to protect it. And, of course, Amazon is really big on kids content. Hook them early. It's a Ronald McDonald model. So let's move on to the TV devices. What do they announce in the TV department?
So there are two new things, sort of one and a half, I guess. One is the new TV stick, which the stick is the same thing. It's a little thing about the size of a stick of gum that goes into the side of your TV. But now it comes with a voice-controlled remote. That's the big thing it didn't have before. So you can still buy the standard one for, I think, $39.99, or for $10 more, you now get it with Amazon's voice search. And when I was talking to them, they were saying a huge majority of the people who are using these devices are using voice search, which makes sense because it's just way better than, you know, left, right through the keyboard to try and type what you're looking for. And their universal search is great and it's getting better. And so they've added voice to that. And with that also comes Alexa. So it's a lot of the same features that you get on the Amazon Echo, where you can look up the weather or ask it questions and get sports scores and do calculations and things like that. So that's all built in now too. And all that stuff is also built in on the Fire TV, which is the more expensive and faster version. And that device is kind of part set-top box, part gaming console, which is interesting because all of the sort of small Android gaming consoles have failed fairly spectacularly. But Amazon really thinks it's on to something here. And they're selling a new game controller and a gaming edition of the Fire TV that comes with a controller. Or for $100, you can still get the Fire TV. And the biggest thing about it is that it streams in 4K, which the Apple TV doesn't do. And Amazon will remind you over and over and over that the Apple TV doesn't do it. And between Amazon Prime, which has a surprising amount of 4K content, and Netflix, which has a surprising amount of 4K content, there's actually quite a bit to watch here. So if you have a 4K TV, this is a pretty great thing to have.
So Apple's got Apple TV, Google has Chromecast, Amazon has Fire TV. There are so many ways to control your TV. How does a consumer decide which one of these they should go with? Is there like a clear leader when you're looking at the field?
No, I think the answer is like you walk into Best Buy and you weep until somebody comes over to help you. And then whatever they throw at you, you take home and then you're happy. I think the reality is for most people, it doesn't really matter. Like the nice place that we're at is that all of these things, whether it's Roku or Apple TV or the Fire TV, Chromecast is something slightly different, but all of these things have something like feature parity. Like there are small things that they do differently. 4K, obviously, if that's important to you, you should buy Amazon's box. But you can kind of just pick. And for most people who just have Netflix and HBO and want to watch those things, you kind of can't lose at this point. So I guess that's good. But on the other hand, it is sort of a ridiculously impenetrable market of people trying to figure out what you actually are supposed to buy here.
It really is tough. And you made the case that that Amazon's case, that their solution is best for Prime members, is a good case. And I think that's one of the criteria one could use. And you also pointed out in your article that Amazon is using a superior video encoding standard called HEVC, which I think should be pronounced Heavy C because it sounds like a rap name. But that is another differentiator. Now, let's talk about the OS. My last question here, the OS behind all this stuff, the new Fire OS 5. What's new in that operating system?
Well, it's not ugly anymore, which is a really great start. It used to be the sort of sweeping carousel with app icons everywhere, and Amazon was trying to be all things to all people. And now you look at it, it's called Fire OS 5 is the new version of the software. And basically what it is just a grid of stuff, whether that stuff is movies or books or songs, whatever it is, it's all sort of organized how you want it to be. And you get a run through of your stuff and then stuff like it that Amazon thinks you might like that is available to you. And it's just that simple. And it is so much better than Fire OS has ever been because it's finally actually about what it should be about. Amazon is saying, we have a lot of Prime members and they're going to love this because it's a really great way to access Prime content. Like I think of this as sort of analogous to the way Amazon does two-day shipping. They're like, well, if you're a Prime member, getting the stuff that we offer is better. And that's the same exact case that they're trying to make now, where you, when you're a Prime member, you have access to all this stuff, and now getting it is better. And they're not trying to do any other things. And in Fire OS, too, it's all about that. They've removed all of the other stuff that you're trying to do. It's not complicated. There's no weird buying tools. It's just all about the stuff you want to watch and read.
This is an amazing announcement, especially in the wake of so much that that Jeff Bezos has been doing. He just announced a new launch pad in Florida and that he's going to be building his own rockets for his space program, which will be ferrying tourists into space. He just dumped an entire season of Hand of God, which is, you know, Amazon did, not him personally, which is an amazing show. I just saw the season finale and it was a mind blower. Incredible TV. He owns the Washington Post, which he is going to be giving away free 6 months of the electronic version to Amazon Prime members. What a guy. What a billionaire. David Pierce is at Wired.com and on Twitter at Pierce. David, thank you for coming on Tech News Today at long last.
Looking forward to doing it again.
More news coming right up. First, let's talk about Gazelle. It is iPhone season. So, you know, the value of phones all take a move to the left whenever there's a new phone out there. Of course, the new ones are highly coveted. The older ones are a little bit more old, basically. And so the price is going to go down. So you want to lock in the price right away. Go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, if you've got an old iPhone or an Android phone, and click on the sell big giant arrow that you see on the site. Choose your device, indicate its condition, what the carrier is, all that kind of stuff, and they'll give you a price. It's really that simple. They send you a box, too, and you throw it in the box, send it back, and you get paid. It's super, super simple. And, of course, if you always want to have the best value for your phones, you not only sell to Gazelle, but buy from Gazelle. They have great phones that have been thoroughly tested. The certified like new option gives you phones that are just like brand new phones. They're just less expensive. In other words, they're less of a waste of money than a brand new phone. They charge you a premium for those brand new phones, especially folks, the iPhones. They make a fortune on those things. And it's better to, if you've got a budget, you get a better phone if you buy from Gazelle. Trade in your used iPhone and electronics for cash. Visit gazelle.com today. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. All right. I'm looking forward to having you back. Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Facebook is adding hundreds of big companies to its Facebook at Work product, including Heineken USA and Hootsuite. Hannah Kuchler is a San Francisco correspondent for the Financial Times and joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Hannah.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, can you review what Facebook at Work is exactly? What is this Facebook at Work business?
So Facebook at Work is a product that they started trialing back in January, which looks very like Facebook, but is designed for people to communicate with their colleagues at work. So, you know, both with chat and groups and newsfeed, you know, they're all the same, but they're being used by employees for work functions. It's kept completely separate from any personal profile. It has better security and better privacy, and they don't sell advertising next to it. So those are the big main differences from the Facebook that you and I know.
Hi, Anna. So are there any specific things that are different, or is it like a very, very similar experience to using Facebook?
It's a very, very similar experience, and that is actually the idea behind it, because they say that companies often, you know, want a product that they can onboard, you know, they can get employees to use very quickly, and most employees will be on Facebook and will know how to use Facebook, and so it's just an extension of that. It's also, they're really stressing its use on mobile, which a lot of enterprise software makers fall down on. Obviously, Facebook has done very well on mobile, so they're trying to sort of say, you know, it's great. One of the examples I really liked about the way it's being used is there's a construction company in the UK where they're getting their builders to take photos on their smartphones of the project and how far they've come at the end of every day. And they're sending that around the world to other offices in Japan and Germany. And it's a classic case of using enterprise software for an employee that would never normally use enterprise software. They're normally, you know, they don't have a computer, they don't have a desk.
So they're bringing in all these big companies, which raises the question about network effect. I think that Facebook itself, regular Facebook, is the best example of network effect since the phone system. Network effect, of course, is that the value of a network increases with additional users, so that the more that people use it because it's valuable, the more valuable it becomes for more people. And does this apply to Facebook at work? Is there a network effect with businesses signing up, or is each business an island and network effect does not apply?
At the moment, each business is an island. I think they're trying to argue that you have a great network effect within.
So I guess we lost Hannah, and I think we're mostly got through the questions we had for her. So why don't we just go ahead and move on? Interesting development there. Facebook is serious about Facebook at work, apparently, and it'll be interesting to talk independently when somebody does. Maybe we can at some point. With a company that's actually using it, and they can, you know, instead of doing the partner thing about, oh, this is transformed, blah, blah, you know, that they have those kind of quotes from companies, as is always the case with this sort of thing. But we'll see what people really think of it.
Yeah, my big fear would be that you would open up Facebook at work, thinking you're opening up personal Facebook, and then, you know, post the embarrassing selfie or whatever else you wouldn't necessarily want to share with your work network.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, Facebook at work is just what people do while they're at work. They use Facebook
right.
at work. It's already happening. All right. Well, some federal agencies have been clamoring for laws that force tech companies to build backdoors into their encryption schemes to enable law enforcement to gain access. Encryption experts say such backdoors will decrease security, not increase it, because any backdoor created for the FBI could be exploited by China, for example. A document leaked anonymously shows that President Obama is getting close to a policy change on encryption. Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai, did I pronounce your name right, Lorenzo, before we go any further?
Yeah, you did a good job.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's a surprise. So Lorenzo is a Vice Motherboard staff writer. Lorenzo, welcome to the show today.
Yeah. Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, if this document is accurate, what's the new policy? What's President Obama's solution to the encryption crisis?
Well, that's actually, we still don't know. Like, so the document, as you said, has been leaked anonymously by, we don't know who, presumably somebody that doesn't want legislation. There was some speculation yesterday on Twitter that this is good news for the pro-encryption camp.
Probably Biden.
Yeah, probably Joe Biden, yeah. But yeah, the document simply lays out a few options that the White House has been considering this summer. So we can infer some things, we can, you know, draw some hypotheses, but we can't really know exactly what the White House is thinking. The point is that, I mean, some things we know, though. Like, there's a point, I think, on page 6, or page 8, but basically the White House IDs say that there's no way that we can compel the companies with either legislation or some other kind of compulsory action.
No, I mean, yeah,
so I think that the White House at least recognizes that legislation is not an option anymore, and they might have to find some other way. And one of the most interesting tidbits of the document was on page 3, where IEDs were basically thinking that if we disavow legislation completely and say we're not going to do a law compelling you to put backdoors, then we might get some voluntary cooperation. But again, it's like all speculation. But, you know, what the document confirms is that this is a very tough position that the U.S. government is in.
Hey, Lorenzo. Good to see you.
Hi. How are you?
Good. So definitely like the blockbuster part of the leaked document was the part that said, you know, tech companies would be happy to cooperate in some way if there is not legislation passed. What do you think that cooperation looks like? I mean, are they saying they'll secretly build a backdoor, or are they just saying, you know, they'll help them in other ways? Like that New York Times article a couple weekends ago that said, you know, DOJ was trying to get Apple to hand over messages in real time and they couldn't because they were encrypted, but then the messages were also stored on the iCloud and they could hand those over. So what do you think cooperation means here?
Yeah, that's a tough question too. I mean, the iMessage example could give us some hints, like, right? So iMessage supposedly is end-to-end encrypted, and I mean, it's effectively end-to-end encrypted. The problem is that it's technically possible for Apple to add like a ghost device or like an invisible device and route the encrypted messages through this ghost device that might be presumably controlled by law enforcement or Apple working for law enforcement. Could this happen with other cases? That's possible, but I mean, on the technical level, it's really hard because a lot of technologists that know about encryption, like Matthew Green or Matt Blaze, have been talking for months about how it's technically impossible to build a backdoor that only, you know, the good guys can exploit. If you build a backdoor, then somebody else could potentially use it.
But we are talking about the idiocy of politics and policy here, and of course we have a presidential race. Do you think this is likely to become a significant issue in the presidential race? And it's a tough call, in my opinion, because the same kinds of people who would want to get really super tough on terrorism and sort of force this or try to force this into legislation are the same kind of people who are very pro-business. And so it's really a contest between, the law enforcement and security apparatus on the one hand and Silicon Valley on the other. My question, though, is do you think this is going to become a political issue in this election?
I'm skeptical because it's a very technical issue, and we might hear, you know, candidates talk about this in broad terms, like, you know, we want law enforcement to be able to access data, but I don't think anybody's going to actually come up with a solution. I mean, even Obama, I mean, what this document also shows is that even the Obama administration doesn't know exactly what to do, and they don't know which side they should fall on. And yesterday, after the document came out, the White House didn't really comment on it, except for Obama was at an event later in the day, and he talked about encryption, but he made some really like vague remarks. He said, we've created a process around which to see if we can square the circle here and reconcile the need for greater and greater encryption and the legitimate needs of national security and law enforcement. So it's just, you know, if even this administration doesn't know exactly where to fall on, I think that the candidates will have the same challenges.
Well, I hope you're right. Lorenzo Franceschi, BickerI is at Vice.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at LorenzoFB. Lorenzo, thanks for joining us today on Tech News Today.
Thanks, Mike.
Snapchat just made a deal with the National Football League of all people. Kurt Wagner's a reporter for Recode and joins us now. Hey, Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. What's this deal all about?
So essentially, Snapchat and the NFL are going to partner to put NFL content into Snapchat's Live Stories feature. So if you're familiar with Live Stories, essentially what they do is they take user-generated content around specific events like an NFL football game, and they'll it into a big montage of video and photos. And oftentimes those just come from regular Snapchat users, like people who might be outside the stadium or in the stands. But with this deal, the NFL is going to be contributing some behind the scenes content. So stuff from maybe the locker room or pregame, postgame. And so Snapchat's going to have a lot of this NFL stuff in the app now, and they're going to be able to sell ads alongside it. And I think that obviously is the big business opportunity for them and for the NFL here.
Does this partnership make a lot of sense? Are Snapchat users the natural NFL audience, or are they trying to reach a different audience?
So, I mean, the NFL reaches so many people right now. I think I read Their opening night game last week had something like 26 or 27 million viewers, which is pretty crazy. I think that they're reaching the audience. I think the Snapchat audience is very similar to the existing NFL audience. I think what they're trying to do, though, is simply get the content in front of more people. So we were told back in June that these live stories can generate as much as 20 million viewers, sometimes more, in a 24-hour period. So if you're at the NFL, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer, right? Like, you pass over some of the content that you want people to see, and now you might be able to reach 20 million more people that you weren't reaching otherwise. So I think that, you know, in that sense, it doesn't really matter who the audience is. I think it is football fans anyway, but they're also just reaching more eyeballs and young people who probably they want to be NFL fans for the rest of their life.
I'm sure they do. Now, Snapchat seems to me, you know, their core competency originally was ephemeral videos. It seems to me that Snapchat would have been ideal to take, you know, amazing plays in almost real time, the second they happen, push it out to Snapchat, and then have it, you know, self-destruct. It's not a situation where that's not easily copied, for example. It's not, you know, and so they're not doing that. They're basically giving additional content, but Snapchat itself is already doing live stories for major events, which you listed some of, you know, you listed some of them in your article. Why not just go that route with the NFL? Why not just have Snapchat create them on their own without a partnership and keep all the money?
You know, I was thinking about that as well, right? Because the NFL, as you pointed out, is not giving them broadcast footage. So the kind of stuff that you might see on NBC, the real high quality, high camera angle that you watch the game, that kind of stuff is not going to be uploaded to Snapchat. So really what they're getting is they're getting behind the scenes stuff, but you're right. Like, they could get a lot of this content from the fans in the stadium on their own. I think the big thing is when it comes to advertising. So the NFL is going to be helping them sell advertising alongside these stories. And I think that it adds a bit of legitimacy, right? I mean, if the NFL is going out and going to its sponsors, which it has plenty of, and saying, hey, we're doing a partnership with Snapchat, we want you to be involved, I think it just adds a credibility that maybe Snapchat is getting there, but its business is still very young. So by partnering with the NFL, I think that they're probably able to secure more advertisers and possibly higher ad rates. Although, of course, we don't, you know, they're not talking about any of those details. But that's my hunch, right, is that this is a strategic partnership as much as a content partnership.
All right. Well, NFL fans, you heard it here first. Get over to Snapchat and download that app. Kurt Wagner's at Recode.net and on Twitter at KurtWagner8. Thanks for joining us today, Kurt.
Hey, thank you both.
All right. Roomba just came out with a new vacuum robot called the Roomba 980. And this one is packed with some amazing technology. Molly McHugh is an editor at Wired and joins us to talk about it. Hey, Molly, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. The Roomba 980 maps your house to memorize where all the furniture is while it's cleaning. They call their technology V-Slam, which I assume has something to do with slamming into the wall. What is V-Slam exactly?
The most basic way to describe it is that while the robot is moving around, it's also using its new sensors to make a map of your house so that it kind of it remembers that, hey, there's a table here and this is a wall. And so its movements are going to be a lot more accurate. And this is, you know, this should clean your house better.
One thing I was really curious about, since I'm always writing about privacy, is whether the Roomba sends information back to iRobot about kind of like how it's doing or what kind of dirt it picks up in order for it to like learn and for them to, you know, improve the Roomba for others.
When we talked about security a little bit when I was there, the thing that they said that they're interested in that the Roomba is mapping now is more how it's able to move around versus the dirt it's picking up. They do a lot of internal testing on dirt. Like, they actually have a lab where they ask people who work there and friends and family to bring in their dirt, and then they analyze it in these labs. So I don't think they're as interested in that information versus like how the robot is able to perceive a wall or how it's able to move from one room to the next room. And what the robot sees is not like just a camera. It's more like patterns of light and dark. So the information is a lot less interesting than like, this is where your bathroom is located.
You know, it reminds me of the movie Gattaca, which was a fantastic movie from, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that, where it's a future in which people, you know, parents can choose to have their child genetically selected. So they give the parents, you know, a million options of their DNA combinations, and they pick the one they like the best. And so there's a class of people who are sort of genetically modified and a class of people who are normal, you know, regular people. And of course, the GMO people are an elite class, and they work in spaces that where everybody else isn't allowed to do it. And to make sure that they keep the riffraff out, they have these vacuum cleaners that go through and vacuum up the DNA from people's keyboards and around their workspace. And if they detect non-GMO DNA, the alarms go off, and the goons rush in and drag off the, you know, the violators. It's a fantastic movie, but this would make it so easy if Roomba were actually in that business. So, you know, get ready for it. Skynet may come in the form of your vacuum cleaner. Now, one of the cool things about this is the Roomba, instead of just randomly going around in these concentric circles and then veering off into another room and, you know, working on that for a while, it actually knows which rooms are which, and it finishes a room before going to the next room, and it also knows when its battery is getting low, and it'll find its way back to its own charger and charge itself. So it's automatic in every way, except you have to clean out the bag once in a while. Is this part of the technology, the navigation, the rooms, the returning to charger? Is any of that improved from the old version?
I have never been lucky enough to have a Roomba, but when the times that I've tried it, and some of my friends will say, yeah, for the most part, it works great, but it moves around a little weird sometimes. Like, it'll be a little wonky. And that's supposed to be hugely improved. That's why it's a lot more expensive as well. But it's supposed to be able to really learn better, and that's these new sensors. So you shouldn't have that problem as much. And I mean, the big selling point for me is that there's an app now that you can control and schedule this Roomba with. It kind of like blows my mind that there hasn't been an app for the Roomba until now.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing that is really exciting to me is that Roomba also makes floor mopping, so where there's no carpet. They have industrial strength ones for the garage. They have another robot that cleans the gutters on your roof, cleans the leaves out, and so on. I wish they would come out with a robot that did the dishes, but that's just me. And ultimately, I'd love to see a world in which all the house cleaning is completely automated, and I never even have to think about it. I would just please take my money.
A dishwasher.
Well, but you have to put them in. And you have to rinse them. I mean, I'm such a clean freak that I actually like thoroughly wash the dishes before I put them in the dishwasher. So it's like, doesn't help me. So that's just me.
So who knows? It could be in the works.
So tell us about the Home iOS app and Android app that they came out with today.
Yeah, I mean, the app is it's more of a platform for, as they kept saying, all of your iRobot products that can connect to it, which right now is only the Roomba 980. But they're really leaving the door open there for, I'm guessing there will be lots more Wi-Fi enabled robots coming from iRobot soon. Maybe that dishwasher someday that you can control from your phone. But it's really cool. It kind of reminded me of like a fitness tracker for your robot. Had like a lot of like personal stats, like the way you go home and look at, you know, how many steps you took in a day. You kind of have that sort of look at what your robot is doing, which is just super weird, but really fun. And then it has stuff like scheduling. You can schedule it for 9 o'clock at night or right before you get home or, you know, while you're on vacation. So you have a lot of options there to kind of decide when your Roomba is going to be actually working.
That's awesome. And I failed to mention in my list of Roomba products, they also have a lawnmower. So they have a robot with dangerous, fast-moving blades on it. So something to look forward to. Molly McHugh is at Wired.com and on Twitter at I am Molly McHugh. Molly, thank you for coming on Tech News today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Apple acquired a company called MapSense for between $25 million and $30 million. The San Francisco startup makes software for analyzing location data. They've got a bunch of customers, big corporate customers that they've been trying hard to get. And they also have some apparently really cool technology. This is a classic Apple acquisition, Kashmir, because it's sort of on the QT. It's not a, you know, it's not a $15 billion acquisition. You know, this is $25, $30 million acquisition. And it's for core technology. It's a staff of, I think, 12 people who are going to either move from San Francisco to Cupertino or they keep working in San Francisco. And it's just something that's going to add subtle but powerful features to their mapping and location features and technologies.
Yeah, mapping data is just so important right now, especially since Apple has expressed interest in self-driving cars. Mapping is just crucial for how those operate. And I would just be like so much happier if Apple Maps was a better tool, given that my iPhone tries to, you know, force me to use it instead of other mapping apps on the phone.
That is the downside of the Apple Watch, too, because when you just want to talk to it and say, you know, navigate to so-and-so, and then the downside is you're using Apple's product and not Google's. So if they can approve that, it would be so much better. Well, in courtroom drama news, Google yesterday filed a lawsuit against an SEO company called Local Lighthouse, which allegedly robocalled potential customers and identified themselves as, quote, Google local listing representatives, unquote. And Google's basically suing them for claiming to be Google to various customers. The weird thing about this news, Kashmir, is that this sort of robocalling, this sort of sales pitch is very, very common. The only difference is that this company is easier to get at. They're not, you know, they're not as stealthy as a lot of the robocalling companies. They're a real company with a real office and a real website and all the rest. And so it's, you know, they've given Google someone to sue.
Yeah, I was very happy to hear about this lawsuit. I actually got many, many calls on my burner number for fake for the Freaking Awesome Karaoke Express from this company.
Wow.
As soon as I signed up for Yelp, they were on me. So I hope this works. And robocalls are, you know, I'm just surprised this company hasn't gotten into trouble earlier, given that the Federal Trade Commission is so opposed to robocalls.
You know, this fake company thing is such a great idea. You know, you it's like it gives you like this view into all these different other features and articles you could write because you know, sort of beat the bushes and knock them out of the woodwork. We were talking before the show. I was telling you, I was reminiscing about a stunt that the BBC pulled a few years ago where they had a downloadable bagel company, and they wanted to see where all these likes were coming from. They didn't buy them. They wanted to see where they just emerged on Facebook and so on. And they got people from, you know, lots of people from Egypt and all over the world who couldn't explain why they were liking a virtual bagel company. Anyway, it was a great idea on your part to do that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It becomes a kind of honeypot for who goes after these new companies. So that was a side part of the story that didn't even make it into the story.
Yeah. Awesome. Very cool. Well, we got some hilarious news coming right up. But first, let's talk about ZipRecruiter. You got to hire the right people, folks. If you are in a position to be hiring, you know, there's a huge difference between highly motivated, highly skilled, highly qualified people who are going to stick with you and help you succeed, and some slacker who's going to come in and waste your time and just sort of like punch the clock and not really care about their job. You want to hire the best people. Where are the best people? They are everywhere. And that's why ZipRecruiter can help you in a very, very big way. You can post to 100 plus job sites with a single click on ZipRecruiter and automate some of those job postings. You can even post to the social networks, Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. You can search their huge resume database, over 6 million resumes in that database. They're mobile optimized, and you can screen candidates the easy way. They'll help you filter out the qualified from the unqualified. They won't make that decision. They give you the tools to carefully craft who's qualified, who isn't qualified, and then you can spend your time on the qualified candidates instead of wasting your time on the unqualified. We have a ZipRecruiter user testimonial from Rick, who said, "I had a great experience using ZipRecruiter. It was so fast and so easy to input all my information to have it sent out on the web. I had replies from highly qualified individuals within 24 hours. I would highly recommend this service to anyone wanting to expand their business." Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. In news you can lose, we told you about Apple's aggressive new Android app that helps Android users switch to the iPhone. The app is called Move to iOS, and it hit the Google Play Store yesterday. As you might expect, the Play Store is not a super friendly environment for an app like this, and it's getting killed in the reviews and ratings department. Move to iOS currently has a 2-star rating with hundreds of 5-star ratings, thousands of 1-star ratings, and pretty much nothing in between. And the app has inspired reviews that you might call negative. One reviewer wrote, quote, "I'd rather be shot in the face than switch to a closed, controlled environment. Apple would never allow this on their communist environment. Google is too accommodating to the iSheep," unquote. Okay, one more. Quote, I attempted to use this app, and instead of data migration, I got Ebola. My cat also started vomiting and talking in tongues, and my kids tried to run into traffic. It also gave me diabetes. Type 2. Unquote. And speaking of Apple and App Stores, yeah, unbelievable. Speaking of Apple and App Stores, Apple's iOS 9 shipped yesterday, and in that release, Apple is allowing ad blockers for the first time. And wouldn't you know it, ad blocking apps shot to the top of the paid downloads list. A $2.99 ad blocker called Peace is suddenly the number one paid iOS app, and a $3.99 ad blocker called Purify is the number four paid app. A 99-cent app called Blocker is at number 17. Wow. Kashmir Hill, is the web in trouble with all these ad blockers and now ad blockers on iOS?
Yeah, it really seems like the adoption of ad blockers is way up. Originally, it's just kind of savvy users, a lot of gamers and tech folk, but it seems to be spreading. And with Apple making it easier than ever, I really do think it's going to cause a rethinking of, you know, how you monetize the web. It's going to be hard for publishers. Maybe more of a move to the native advertising that people started experimenting with in the last couple of years.
It's getting hard out here for a pub. All right. The latest trailer for the latest Steve Jobs movie just hit this morning. Let's take a look at this trailer.
What if the computer was a beautiful object? Something you want to look at and have in your home. And what if, instead of it being in the right hands, it was in everyone's hands?
We'd be talking about the most tectonic shift in the status quo since...
ever.
I'm begging you to manage expectations.
Have I ever let you down?
Every single goddamn time.
Then I'm due.
Your Apple stock is worth $441 million.
And your daughter and her mother are on welfare.
She's not my daughter!
You must be able to see that she looks like you.
We will know soon enough if you were Leonardo da Vinci or just think you are.
You're the only one who sees the world the same way I do.
No one sees the world the same way you do.
Everyone is waiting for the Mac.
What are people going to do with it?
It's an abstract.
They're going to do that?
You're issuing contradictory instructions. You're insubordinate. You make people miserable.
The board believes you're no longer necessary to this company.
I sat in a garage and invented the future.
Because artists lead and hacks ask for a show of hands.
What you make isn't supposed to be the best part of you.
When you're a father, that's what's supposed to be the best part of you.
I'm the only one who knows that this guy is someone you invented.
Is there a plan?
The plan will reveal itself to you when you're ready to see it.
All right. Well, there it is. Now, you'll note that if you saw it go by, there was a second there where they showed a scene that was based on a well-known photo of Steve Jobs. Let's take a look at a comparison between the trailer and that photo. And there it is. There's Fassbender. And if you go below, the difference is that there's no computer in the real photo, and the lighting is orangey instead of good lighting. That's encouraging I looked at the details of that scene in the movie, and they really, with the exception of the deliberate changes, went to great lengths to exactly copy that photo. And I hope there's a lot of that. I doubt that the dialogue will be true to life. I doubt that the story will be true to life, but if they can, you know, capture the feel of these events, it might be kind of a fun attribute.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
Anyway,
but man, it's starting to feel like Steve Jobs movies are starting to feel like Spider-Man movies. There's so many of them.
Exactly. The Fantastic Two, Steve. All right. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Michael Constantine in Huntington Station, New York, who posted this picture on Twitter. He tweeted that this is how he watches Tech News Today every single day. And you notice there, if you pan down, that's Jeff Jarvis's book, What Would Google Do?
Nice.
A little Easter egg there. Very cool. Very, very cool.
Did Jeff Jarvis send this to us?
Probably. His mother did. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. And use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. So what's next for your new fake company, Cashmere, or what else are you working on?
Oh, I don't know. I was thinking about now trying to buy my fake company Negative Reviews to explore the negative review economy.
Oh, you have to do that. You absolutely have to do that. You know, I love, you know, it's really another possible thing to explore is the purchasing of I guess the blackmail or something like that. Here's an experience that I had. My wife and I were eating at a restaurant in Sonoma County, and we're talking to the owner of the restaurant and we're telling him, oh, we saw you on Yelp and all this stuff. And he's like, oh, Yelp, don't get me started on Yelp. He said that the salespeople called him from Yelp and said that they would remove negative reviews if he bought ads or something like that. And he just, and I went online and did a search, and it turns out that that may be a fairly widespread complaint. And it'd be interesting to find out somehow, since you're creating honeypots out there, how much of that actually goes on? How much you know, funny business goes on in terms of you know, trading the removal of negative reviews for paid ads? So it looks like we lost Cashmere, and we'll fix it in post. She's busy. She got a fake company, writing real articles about fake companies. Okay, so it looks like we may not get her back. So I'd like to thank Cashmere for coming on, and of course she'll be back next week. Let us know what's on your mind. Send email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. That's 260-868-7469. Subscribe to Tech News Today on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com/technewstoday and click on the subscribe button. You choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And you can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv/live. Follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and you can follow me at elgin.com. And don't miss our other new show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.